Time for the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is WGN Radio. I'm John Williams. Thanks for dialing us in this afternoon. We're produced by Pete Zimmerman, and we do this Monday through Friday from noon to 1. And we start often on Tuesdays with Tom Gimbel, the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. Visit thelasallenetwork.com, and there he is. Welcome back. How are you, Tom?
I'm great, John Williams. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. You have some thoughts about hiring in 2022 based on where we are in 2021. What's on your mind today?
So we surveyed 250 executives, heads of HR, CEOs, chief operating officers, CFOs, and we just asked a variety of questions. Obviously, 2021, 2020 were interesting years, to say the least. And with all the reports of the labor shortage, we thought it was a great time to collect data moving into the new year, and just found out some interesting things. Some probably obvious to some, but not so obvious to others. The top hiring challenges the companies faced this year, number one was obviously meeting compensation requirements, but number two was candidates ghosting during the interview process. Number three was unskilled candidates applying for jobs. And number four were candidates just turning down the offers.
Candidates ghosting. That is interesting to me because I know somebody who's been looking for a job for the last year or so, and sometimes it's very frustrating for candidates when you're hundreds of people maybe applying for a job, maybe tens of people, but you never hear back. The offer just sort of disappears. It works both ways, huh?
It absolutely does in this environment. I mean, we talk about quit rate every once in a while on the show, John, where employees are quitting without having another job, and that's going to translate during the interview process of, I got an offer, and I'm not going to call back all the other three or four companies that I had on the schedule. I'm just not going to show up, which is crazy to me, but yes, that's happening most definitely. And I think that, you know, there's empathy both ways, and I think that is, you have to have empathy for the employers that are getting potentially hundreds of applications that they can't respond to everybody or they'd never get their jobs done. And on the flip side, candidates who get an offer when they've been looking or what have you, and they're excited and they just kind of forget about everything else.
How frustrating that must be for the HR person who's got a candidate in mind and then they just disappear after all the time and effort you put into that, right?
Yeah, it's a challenge, but you know, it's a two-way street, and too often when you're going through these things, it's the side that's getting burned, quote unquote, that has the hard feelings. What you have to realize is it's about more than just you and the person. Each side has so many parties, and you have to have empathy for everybody when you're going through this. But, you know, my belief is manners never go out of style, and at the very least, you can drop an email saying, sorry, we're moving on to the next thing. And at least it's better than not getting anything.
I do that when I cancel a reservation at a restaurant, and you've never heard a happier person on the phone than when you say, hey, we're not going to be there. And they're like, are you kidding me? Thank you. They're happier that I canceled than when I made the reservation to begin with. Talk to me.
There's no doubt about it.
Talk to me about some of the areas where companies are successful in acquiring candidates. Where do they find them? What do they do?
So the three areas that companies are finding people the most are the job boards, the referrals, and then third-party recruiters, obviously like my firm. And so what it's saying is that job boards, Indeed, CareerBuilder, LinkedIn, that's still the primary aspect that a company will go and drop a classified ad that used to be in the newspaper decades ago, but that they'll post that and they'll get responses to that. Now, the problem with that area is candidates are going to send out so many resumes to so many jobs, which coincides with the problem the challenge that hiring companies are facing is that they're getting unskilled and unqualified candidates for the jobs, right? Because if you can just push a button now and send off your resume, you'll send it to anything on the hopes that maybe they'll call you back. And so that's really frustrating to corporations, hiring HR departments and hiring managers, because they're getting a lot of resumes that don't match up.
It seemed to me like networking, a personal referral would be most effective, and job boards would be most frustrating. This is not a commercial for you, Tom, but I would hire somebody to do it. Go get me three good candidates or five good candidates, and I don't have to worry about it. That's what you do, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what we do. The challenge to what we do is we're the most expensive of the bunch. And so it's a service that you're paying for, and that's going to cost a company money. Now, if I'm a candidate, I want to go through a recruiter because they have the ear of the company, and they're going to be an advocate on my behalf. The job boards are easy for a candidate because you push a button, but there's no personalization. Networking and referrals, while great, most people don't know how to leverage a relationship to get an introduction or an interview. It's a skill.
Does cash solve some of these hiring problems for companies?
Interestingly enough, not so much. So top areas that companies plan to increase their spend in 2022, one is employee salaries, but then you drop down into training and hiring and flexible hours and things along those lines. And so what you get is a situation where companies are saying that they think that remote work options is the majority of companies in our survey stated that their number one way they want to offset turnover is through flexible work and remote work. And the challenge to that is if every company is now making that the basis, it's not an advantage over anybody else.
Yeah. Are companies hiring only vaccinated people? Is that something you should disclose, lie about, tell the truth? What's happening there?
Well, you know my feeling, always tell the truth, right? The truth. I think we ended last week with the truth, which will set you free. So I think that if you're not vaccinated, you're not vaccinated, and you should tell people that. There are plenty of companies out there, probably not in New York at the moment because of what de Blasio did, but I think the majority of companies are led by people that have very strong convictions. That's why they're CEOs or owners. And there are people that are pro-vaccine and some that are anti or more open to choice. And there's a job out there for everybody, but you got to if you don't want to get vaccinated, then you got to live with the consequences of that.
But you asked about this when asked if their company is hiring only vaccinated employees at this time. 42% said no, 33% said yes. So a third of companies said they're only hiring vaccinated employees. So I guess another way to put it is two-thirds of the companies out there are not requiring vaccination to get the job, right?
Correct. And what that comes down to is if people are remote, right, then they feel it's not an issue. And if they are doing it where, you know, they're doing masks or testing for coming into the office, those are issues. You also have the situation in more manufacturing environments, you tend to have less vaccinated people for whatever the reason is in that area. And so those are very blue-collar workers are extremely hard to find right now because there is no remote work option, and those salaries tend to be lower. So it's really about the companies trying to figure out the best way to attract people. Now, if you're working on a certain demographic, there might be a strategy to say we're only hiring vaccinated people, and that will attract a certain demographic and maybe more so because you're taking that stand. And the same goes in the opposite as well. And so the question is how vocal you want to be about that in order to use it to attract talent.
Tom Gimbel, founder and CEO at LaSalle Network, thelasallenetwork.com. Okay, Tom, have a good week. Thanks for your help today.
Always good to be with you, John. Stay safe.
Nick Lichtenberg's on a phone line, deputy editor of the economy side, Business Insider. Businessinsider.com is the website. Hey, Nick, it's John Williams. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, happy to be here.
I'm intrigued by the headline, Key Indicators Hint, Supply Chain Crisis is Over and Inflation Will Cool Off Soon. That's a take I haven't heard lately. Start with the supply chain. How are you all so optimistic about that, or who's saying this?
Yeah, well, there are a couple key indicators we watch on the economy team, and one of them is IHS Market, it's called. It basically is a big survey of what leading businesses, especially manufacturers, are showing. And, you know, leading indicators like this can be a couple weeks ahead of us in the media and our headlines, and so we try to pay attention to them. And this one's showing that they've really been scrambling to increase inventories, and manufacturers are finally showing that they actually have a lot of stuff. The supply chain that was so broken for so many months of 2021. Maybe it's unkinking and they actually have a lot of stuff to sell while consumers are buying a little bit less of it. So basically the traffic jam is easing up.
That's interesting. I hope the reality catches up with that forecast. I thought you were going to say that the manufacturers have enough supplies to make the items, furniture, appliances, shoes, whatever. And not that we make shoes here, but you get my point.
Yeah.
You're saying that maybe you're talking more about store shelves or warehouses for digital orders, that sort of thing?
Yeah. So, we're seeing it on both sides. We're seeing that production is accelerated. So the stuff is arriving to the manufacturers to make stuff. And then the finished products that the inventories are piling up. A big problem with the supply chain crisis has been that there just isn't stuff to sell because it's all sitting in containers, either off the port of Los Angeles or at a warehouse somewhere. And so we're seeing indicators that these things are actually they're arriving in companies' warehouses, and they're also the materials are making their way to manufacturers.
I suppose some businesses, the fortunate ones anyway, have a backlog of orders. So then the next kink in that chain is going to be getting those things out the door, right?
Yeah, the order backlogs we're seeing those are sliding below the average from the last 12 months, and new orders have dropped to their lowest level since February in some of the data we're looking at. So the new orders are going down, and so are the backlogs. So, the traffic jam's easing up.
Is this related to inflation, or is that just something else you're talking about?
Yeah, so we're looking at the big report coming out this Friday. It's called the CPI report on the Consumer Price Index. And inflation, economists will tell you different things about it, but basically too much money chasing too few goods out there. So if there's more goods to buy, then inflation should come down. But, this Friday, we're still expecting to see a big number, but it could be slowing is the big story.
Yeah, maybe the direction is more important than the location of those things sometimes. Okay, so where I have heard people say, hey, cars, appliances, it's going to be that way through 2022. You might back that off a little bit, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the same thing too about how the crisis will last into 2022 for a while. But I'm curious myself to see if we might start seeing some actual discounts come back around January. Maybe the inventories are built up enough where we start seeing some deals out there in the economy again.
That's how we'd know that you're right, isn't it? If they start offering 50% off or 20% off or whatever it is, right? If they have some doorbuster sales, then you know that the supply is there and it's back to the old days. Well, let's hope you're right. I have no reason to doubt it. It's an interesting observation from Nick Lichtenberg, the deputy editor of Economy at Business Insider. Okay, Nick, good reporting. Thanks for your help today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on so much.
If you are around Lincoln Park for much of the year, they've got a great farmer's market over there. But what happens in the winter? Those farmer's markets go away. There's an online way to participate in the farm market community. And there's also, let me see if I've got this right, a kind of brick and mortar outlet in Lincoln Park. On a phone line is Erin Tortura. She's the co-founder and director of resources at What's Good. What's Good? Let's talk to Erin. You're on WG. Erin, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning. I'm doing well. How are things there?
I'm going to start this interview all over again. Good afternoon. How are you? It's now 12:36.
Good afternoon. Hi, doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Erin, tell me a little bit about What's Good. Is it resources, What's Good, or What's Good? What's your business?
What's Good. All one word, What's Good. So What's Good is an omni-channel grocer. We started as a technology platform to efficiently marry local product availability with consumers. So we started out a few years ago providing this technology service to farmers and consumers to help them connect. Back in 2018, we began doing delivery operations, sort of as an Amazon-style direct-to-your-door from local farmers. And then, of course, last year had a lot of growth and traction with local farmers markets to bring their markets online when many of them shut down during the pandemic. And so our partnerships there have expanded, and we have a lot of great food production there in the Chicago area. So we were excited to come to Chicago and bring our services there and start performing delivery on behalf of the farmers markets and directly from the farms.
So does this sort of skirt the need then for the actual farmers markets? The local producers make this stuff and then somebody delivers it directly to the consumer? Is that what happens?
That is what happens, but we don't see this as a means to skirt the farmers markets or to undercut, you know, their importance in the community. There's definitely a lot of value in connecting directly with the farmers and vendors and talking with them in person, you know, during the week when the farmers markets happen. What Westgood does is provide additional, number one, sales avenues for those vendors and convenience for the customers outside of the few-hour window every week, which you have to plan to shop during. So that was kind of how the brick and mortar farm shop came to be, was that year-round availability to fresh local food, making it more accessible during longer hours and every day of the week.
So now you do have this farm shops in Lincoln Park, and that opens today, right?
That's correct. Yes, we just had our grand opening.
And so now do I go there? Is that a pickup point for these online services, or do you have fresh groceries there, produce, and I can just stroll in and shop?
That's correct, yeah. We have a number of ways that you can continue supporting local producers. We're continuing our partnerships with the farmers markets as well through the winter. So you can actually pre-order for delivery and for pickups from some of the farmers markets in a variety of pickup points, including our farm shop. You can also pre-order for pickup at our farm shop. We're doing 1 hour pickup and 1 hour delivery in a smaller radius nearby the store. But then we do a full pre-order availability that you can purchase up to 7 days in advance and get delivery all throughout Chicagoland. If you prefer to pick up, we do have the online purchasing option that you can pre-order and pick up. We'll even bring it out to your car for those who have limited availability to get out, or you're in a rush. Call the store, and we have curbside service available as
but
well.
But do I have to have pre-ordered? Or can I just say, hey, I need some arugula, I'll swing by?
Yep, that's right. We'd love to see you. Locally produced churned butter. We've got arugula. There's pastured meat. A variety of items. So pretty much everything you need to fill your grocery, your kitchen with local goods.
Yeah. So who's your competition then? Who else is in that space? I'm thinking of some of the high-end markets that have popped up on the corners in Chicago. There's grocery stores everywhere. What's your niche then?
That's right. Yeah, our niche is really that transparency in sourcing. So we offer sources on every single product. You can, in most cases, you can go to the production facility or to the farm. We're trying to stay, as local as possible with all of the products. So many of the labels that you see in our store come from those very same farmers that you can see at the farmers markets. The goal is really to provide, again, that year-round. We're trying to keep things seasonal. We will be keeping things seasonal as much as possible. And for any of those additional products that we're bringing in, those are on a very limited basis based on, staple products that folks are looking for. And the sourcing there is important for us to really look at how food was being produced and where it's being produced if it's not an item that's coming locally. But we want folks to come into our shop and, number one, not feel overwhelmed with choices. So the fact that you can walk into some grocery stores and spend 20 minutes in the yogurt aisle, for example, there's a lot to really look into there. So we're curating our menu and the products that we carry based on what we know intelligent shoppers are looking for. And when I say intelligent shoppers, I mean folks that are aware or wanting to learn more about what's in their food, but more importantly, what's not in their food. So our local food offers benefits on multiple levels, and this is what we're really trying to highlight: food quality, nutritional value, the consumer health benefits, taste, the local economic impact on of purchasing. There's less waste involved because of our small footprint, the environmental impact, the transparency of supply chain, more reliability and resiliency. As we've seen, especially over the last year, we know that there's a lot of gaps and shortages that can occur in the very long supply chain when we have a disruption such as a global pandemic and we have people unable to work or can't come to work. And there's a lot of, we sell grocery store shelves empty, but our farmers still had food, which was really neat to help fill that gap and help them to connect directly to the consumers. And so we're just doing this now in a new modern way, or actually I would say the opposite, and actually in an old school way, the brick and mortar store. But we're taking that into a modern approach with the introduction of technology and some of the conveniences that people like you and I and probably most listeners are using. You know, when you ask folks when's the last time they had a package delivered to their door, most people would indicate that either yesterday or today there's probably a package on their door. So we're bringing local food with that same convenience.
I got to go, but short answer to this, do you do meat too then? I imagine produce, you mentioned butter, yeah. Meat as well?
Yes, all pastured meats. We have beef, chicken, lamb, a variety, pretty much everything you're looking for. And we're continuing to source more and find new products.
So if you want to find out what's on their shelves, if you will, sourcewhatsgood.com. Is that the best website then, sourcewhatsgood.com?
That's correct. And if you click shop now, you can find all the different markets. We're in a number of markets, and we have a number of options outside of Chicago. But in Chicago, we have our farm shop, our delivery options, and our farmers market partners that we work with.
Aaron Tortora is the co-founder and director of resources at What's Good. And again, Source What's Good, all one word, sourcewhatsgood.com. Nicely done, Aaron. Good luck to you all.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
12:44 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The Chicago startup that serves food at kitchenless establishments is being bought by a New York tech company. Second Kitchen will be acquired by Reef Technology for terms that have not been disclosed. Reef operates delivery restaurants and parking real estate, according to Cranes, and has backing from venture capital firm SoftBank. Second Kitchen delivers food from nearby restaurants to kitchenless businesses like bars, breweries, and hotels. Customers can view custom menus and order food directly to their table or hotel room using a physical kiosk and QR codes. Walgreens Boots Alliance may be running a sale of Boots, the UK drugstore chain it partners with. Walgreens' goal is reportedly to focus on its North American business. The Deerfield-based Walgreens has hired Goldman Sachs Group to advise it and review options for Boots, which could include a sale of the unit next year. Walgreens could also choose to list Boots as a separate publicly traded company or keep the business. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
With the business of food, here's Steve Alexander.
Here are four people who are doing something many of us have trouble doing.
Oh, say can you see?
What so proudly we hailed
at the twilight's last gleaming.
Those are all farmers and ranchers of various ages, the final four in a contest to sing the national anthem at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association Convention in 2022. Many of us believe there are a few harder songs to sing and sing well than the national anthem, but this guy, he makes it seem easy.
This is Jim Cornelison. I do all the anthems for the Chicago Blackhawks, and for the last 5 years, I've taken over Jim Neighbor's role singing Back Home Again in Indiana for the Indianapolis 500.
One reason Jim is so good at singing the anthem is his background as a world-class opera singer. And about the notion that it is a difficult song to sing for most of us?
Generally, people say that because the range is about an octave and a half if you don't take the high note on three. you know, it's more than a church hymn, and it deserves some respect. People need to understand that they're a custodian of kind of a national treasure and go out and deliver a performance that's worthy of the moment, that is the best they can do.
He is okay with stylized versions for people who have the chops.
Well, sometimes I think it's great. You know, Whitney Houston's is my favorite. I still really enjoy Marvin Gaye's.
Thank you, Jim Cornelison. And the winner of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association contest is...
Hey, y'all, my name's Stephanie Nash. I'm a fourth-generation dairy farmer from Middle Tennessee.
Yeah, way to go, Stephanie. From the farm to your belly, apologies, because this is barely a food. It's National Cotton Candy Day. Sugar and air. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us now on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Instagram's going to tell you to stop using Instagram. Is that one way to put it, Amy?
That's one way to put it, for sure. So essentially, it's going to tell users now when to take a break. And you can go into settings and you can determine that. 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. When you reach that threshold, you'll get this full screen alert telling you, hey, it may be time to close out. And it'll suggest some things like take a deep breath, listen to a song, check your to-do list, things like that. So that's a brand new feature. Now, it should be noted that's rolling out here just a day before Instagram will be facing some questions from lawmakers on Capitol Hill over child safety practices. So the timing is good. But they're also going to roll out kind of they're calling it a stricter approach for younger users, for teen users. If they notice the user is dwelling on a particular topic, revisiting something over and over and over, no matter what it is, not necessarily something dangerous, they will start to suggest other types of content to have a more well-rounded experience. That's the goal anyway.
Boy, the AI is amazing, isn't it? That's not a human being looking over your shoulder. That's an algorithm. Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
Talk to me about Toyota joining the race to build better batteries in the U.S. as the headline. I think a lot of people like the sound of this kind of reporting.
Yeah, because, you know, this really has to do with range anxiety, which is one of the barriers for more people adopting electric vehicle technology is, well, but if I have to drive, I don't know if I have the range to get there. You know, where do I charge? Things like that. So the battery thing has been a big part of that. But also the supply chain crisis that we continue to be in has really impacted that. We've seen that with the chip shortage and battery parts and things like that. So automakers more and more want to move production of the batteries closer and closer to their factories to cut down on those supply chain kind of issues. So Toyota has announced a pretty ambitious project here. So it's going to be, they're calling it a mega site near Greensboro, North Carolina. They're going to employ over 1,700 people when they open in 2025. This is just the announcement they made this week. But in terms of the numbers of like output they're going to be doing, they're going to be making enough lithium-ion batteries to power 200,000 electric vehicles. They said they will have room to add a fifth and sixth production line a short time later, bringing capacity to 1.2 million vehicles a year. That's really quite a bit, though.
And the administration is considering an incentive, right, to, I guess, the purchase of these batteries, the purchase of these cars?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So there's a lot being hammered out right now in terms of tax incentive and, you know, because that's really what it's going to take because it right now the cost is high and very similar things to what we're seeing with sustainable aviation fuel. It's expensive right now because it's not in widespread use. So there's a push to get more backing for some, you know, government subsidies, things like that, to make it more widely adopted. Exactly the same situation here with electric vehicles, batteries, things like that.
Speaking of aviation, American Airlines CEO is stepping down.
He is. CEO Doug Parker, he's stepping down. His last day will be March 31st. He's going to be replaced by the American's current president, Robert Isom. These two have worked together for a very long time. So a lot of analysts for the industry have said this to them signals that American is anticipating a very smooth and steady transition. You know, when Robert Isom first came into American, when they merged with American Air, right, or sorry, U.S. Airways. So when they merged, his job was sort of absorbed. So they've worked together a very long time. They seem to, at least publicly anyway, very support each other and be good friends. So they're very much in line, you know, with the strategic plan for American. So I think a lot of people are very hopeful that this means some calm, steady leadership in a very turbulent time for airlines.
Yeah, no kidding. And then you've got this latest variant, although the market is responding today to a number of things, including the hope that this new variant is not so bad. I understand a lot of countries in Europe are locked down again, but maybe this is not going to be a long pause in the recoveries.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's been the theme for the last 2 years. Every time there's new news, we kind of have to wait and see and learn what we learn. But yeah, perhaps some hopeful news about the new variant indeed.
What about this server outage for a lot of the platforms?
Oh boy, this is creating a lot of drama today. So Amazon Web Services, they are still experiencing some outage. I was looking at downdetector.com earlier today. It really spiked up quite high, probably around shortly before 11 a.m. It really peaked. But over the last hour, it's gone down, but it's still there. And Amazon Web Services really powers a lot of stuff. So Amazon.com, of course, but also Disney Plus streaming service, Netflix, Slack, Robinhood, the stock trading app we've talked a lot about, Coinbase, which is a cryptocurrency exchange. There's a lot of things that have been impacted by this. Even Kindle Books, Amazon Music, Chime and Ring security doorbells. A lot of people have been experiencing outages. It's not universally happening. It's by region. And as I said, again, it's gone down over the last hour or so. It's looking a lot better. But even some news organizations work off of Amazon Web Services. So the Salt Lake Tribune was posting earlier on Twitter saying, you know, we're still experiencing some outages. We're sorry. They're still trying to share other content other ways. But, you know, a lot of people rely on Amazon Web Services for their online commerce, their online presence, things like that. So this could have certainly been much, much worse, but it's still, there's still plenty of people that are very irritated by what's going on.
Kidding. Amy Guth joining us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.